Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel. Hope everyone is doing wonderful and that 2018 is still nice and new and shiny and rosy. You can reach us at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We're also on all the streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Android, Stitcher, and more. And just a quick favor, again, if y'all are on there and you see those little stars popping up, if you can possibly give us some stars or write a review just to kind of get us a little bit more noticed in the rankings, we would really appreciate it. We had an amazing guest on last week, Curtis King. He is a rap star, he is a producer, he is a beats maker, and now he's a YouTube star and one hell of an entrepreneur, and he just shared so much golden wisdom all about the industry and working with Kendrick Lamar and Absol and MERS and touring and producing and then making this independent pivot to YouTube and what that entailed and building up a fan base on YouTube and really getting his beats licensing website off the ground. Just really a superstar and very, very privileged to hear his story and get some real good inspiration and feeling very empowered, especially for you independent artists out there. Very excited to introduce our next guest now, Alejandro Cohen. He is a musician. He has written and performed with the bands Languis, Pharaohs, and Psychic Powers. He's a film composer. His music is actually going to be featured in a film coming out next month on PBS called The Rise and Fall of the Brown Buffalo. It's a very, very cool film about countercultural icon Oscar Zeta Acosta. And he is the station director for Dublab, which is a pioneer in the online radio world and also the big supporter of music, arts, and culture in Los Angeles since 1999. Many artists and DJs have gotten their start at Dublab, and their programming supports a wealth of not only music, but art exhibits, films, events, and so much more. They're actually expanding to affiliate stations all around the world, Germany, Japan, and Spain, and also on your FM dial if you are in the area at 99.1. The signal will continue to grow stronger, I have no doubt of that. Let's kick things off, right? I always do with some brilliant music. Here's a track from Ale's band, Pharaohs. It's called Air Kiribati off their latest album. Check it out. Joining me on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm really happy you can be here this morning.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me and, including me in this.
Absolutely. So why don't we start off with childhood? why don't you tell me about music as a kid? Like what was your first kind of...
Painful memory system?
Yeah, painful memory.
as most people, I think the first introduction is through the music of your parents and the impact that has, over the years. And, I don't come from a family that was necessarily into music or adventurous in their listening habit. It's like pretty much what my mom listened to was kind of like your standard pop of the time, or popular music of the time, which, Beatles, some Billy Joel, stuff like that, some Bee Gees, stuff from the a lot of like adult contemporary kind of stuff, when it comes to, if I have to pinpoint a genre. So that's pretty much the upbringing. But I remember a lot of that music having an impact, at the time, and really kind of realizing that it's kind of part of you a lot more than you think sometimes, even though you stray away and then you explore so many territories inevitably the music that you were exposed to as a child does have an impact.
So what would you say was your first time that you were really kind of interested in music, or that you were like, I really want to do more of this?
I remember by the time I was 13, between 13 and, you know, I remember having first thoughts of like, I would like to play in a band. That would be cool. That would be something that I could do, you know. That was about when I was 13. That's when I felt like, and I remember being like very discouraged by friends, you know, kind of like, oh no, only people that study a lot, you know, playing a band. I was like, oh, okay. You know, I just didn't quite understand. But it was the first time that it felt that you know, that I could do it, you know, that I was interested and that I wanted to explore more. And it took until I was 16 to actually start learning an instrument. So it took me a good 3 years to kind of make up my mind and the right opportunity. Oh, okay, I'm going to start learning guitar. But yeah, that was about the time. I remember being exposed to a few, like this cable TV channel that had a lot of great music videos. They would just play all this great music and absorbing all that, starting taping things from the TV or from the radio, on cassettes. And yeah, that was about that period between 13 and 16.
Did you take any formal lessons for guitar?
I took lessons. I took a couple of years of guitar. I took a couple of years of piano. And then I started playing in bands when I was 16. And I remember like starting as like, oh, yeah, that's what you do. You start playing guitar. And then once you start getting into bands that come more from the kind of the punk ethos, you know, like, you know, you start listening to Velvet Underground, or you start listening to Jesus and Mary Chain, or you start listening to a lot of music that doesn't really apply, you know, like studying guitar is not, especially when you start studying guitar, it was like, this teacher, he was great, but he taught me classical music. So you start thinking like, oh, why am I studying, you know? So I remember after a couple of years feeling that I wasn't able to apply much of what I was learning in the music I wanted to make. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was really into a lot of prog rock and Robert Fripp and all that, which up to this day, learning classical music, and like finger picking, you know, with classical playing with my fingers, up to this day, still kind of pretty much the style I have, you know. So you could say that, you know, my guitar playing, it's a combination of Robert Fripp with like classical with, you know, some Jesus and Mary Chain in there. That would be kind of pretty much it, you know, or My Bloody Valentine. But I'm a huge, huge fan of Robert Fripp. I love everything he does, and he was very influential in developing a style.
Nice. So were you writing songs as well for these bands?
Yeah, I remember started writing songs right away, pretty much. I remember, you know, started writing very simple songs, but, you know, you could say they were terrible, and yeah, they were probably just terrible. I remember a few, and it's just like, you know, basic, but you got to start somewhere, you know? I'm not too harsh on myself about that. I do listen to cassettes of the time of that era of like 1991, 1992, things I was recording with Porter Studios. And I realized it's a typical thing where you have all these songs that you make, and each one is a direct kind of like reference to something you're in, you know? So one sounded more like, you know, a little more proggy. One was more like Jane's Addiction. One was more like this, more like that. And you can hear the trends of the era in there too, you know, and since I was going through some tapes I was digitizing before they fall apart, and it made me realize how obvious it is, the references of the time. So, you know, you're still trying to find your voice, and I guess that's almost a process that never ends, you know, you could argue.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. I like that. So what happened after, you know, after your teen years, like you're playing in these bands, did you have any intention of making it big, or where did you go from there?
I think the biggest challenge was to understand, and that took many, 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 many years to understand, because I didn't come from a family that was in any sort of like showbiz, you know? The main part was to understand that many times there's no such thing as making it big, you know? Right. As a realistic plan, you want to hope for a kind of like middle class kind of lifestyle. Way more realistic. I'm making it big, and you come, you know, when your family is not in show business, doesn't understand, you know, how it works.
Yeah.
There's this misunderstanding that it's all or nothing, meaning mm-hmm. that you're either living in a mansion surrounded by, you know, fame and fortune, or mm-hmm. you're in the gutter, you know, begging in the streets, and then broke, you know, the kind of broke musician. And they don't understand. They just don't know, you know, they just don't know.
Right.
And then so you're very discouraged because, you know, the parents have these fears of, you know, you're going to most likely not going to make it, you know.
Right.
Because, you know, really the true kind of making it is the same. Your odds are the same as playing the lottery, really.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't understand, oh, no, there's ways to make a living. There's all these ways to make it, you know, a decent middle-class living when it comes down to it. And that took many years to understand, many, many years, on what the options are that you could apply your talents to many other areas of expertise and really how, you know, you don't attach yourself to one project, but you have to play many roles and, you know, you produce, you play, you do music supervision, you record, you engineer, you know, you just, there's so many hats you have to wear, and particularly these times, you know, where everything is kind of like collapsing and shaping and reshaping because of technology.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, going back to dreams of making it big, there's always that thing. It's weird because, you know, you start playing guitar, immediately people are like, oh, here comes, you know, whatever. You want to be like John Lennon? I'm like, I don't know. I just want to play guitar, you know?
Right.
I don't know. It's as if I, you know, get into computers and everyone's like, hey, Bill Gates, you know?
Right.
And that was a constant comment, you know? That was a constant, like relentless commentary from uncles, from friends, from family members, you know, and it's just like, I don't know why playing an instrument is immediately associated with pursuit of fame, you know. I found it always an odd comparison. I think, of course, you know, you want to be successful. I mean, no one wishes to. I wish I fail. You know, I wish I. You know, nothing happens out of it. But from there to say, you know, making it big. That phrase alone, I feel, is a very toxic phrase. That is very mm-hmm. dangerous because mm-hmm. it creates a false sense of really how things are. You know, it never ends. You know, you continue, and even when you're a huge star, you know, you see them. Okay, your record did well. Next year, a new record or something else. You got to continue. It's not you. It's a strange concept, making it. You know.
That's a really good point. And I think that's what people don't understand, because it's just, they've been fed. We've all been fed, you know, media and lifestyles of the rich and famous. That's all we see. We see the cars, the mansions, the success, the planes, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You don't hear the stories about, you know, people that can still make a living and they're not followed around by the paparazzi. You know, it's just that those aren't glamorous. They're not exciting, you know.
There's no story to tell, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, it's just,
yeah.
I remember one time being at this person's home, and the husband of this person, it was someone that I didn't know very well. It's just like a friend of a friend. And the husband was this guy, he was like a lawyer or something. And he kept asking all these questions. He was just like, going at it in he was really puzzled and intrigued and kind of almost insulting, you know, in trying to figure it out, you know, how much I make and then this and that, you know. I'm like, what do you think? You think that I go home and I put this gold suit, you know, and you know, and look at myself in the mirror and try to put, I don't know, it was very odd. And then and that is a misunderstanding from the general public, that it's if you don't come from a family that does that for a living and they tell you, no, this is how it works, really, this is how you do and all that, it takes many years to get over that because the commentaries are relentless from someone that from family and friends, the teasing, the hey, you haven't made it yet or stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm,
I remember being kind of relentless, you know, and the discouragement from family was you know, it wasn't like an opposition of like, I won't let you do it.
Yeah.
But it was never like, I can see you doing that. No, it was always like, well, we'll see. Good luck with that, you know?
Yeah.
And in some ways, I also don't blame them because I didn't display the qualities of someone that would be obviously doing well. You know, it's not like I can, like, you know, just like break out in singing and playing. Like, you know, I think whatever talent I have tends to be under the surface and it's more subtle. So it's hard for people to see, oh, this guy's going to do well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So part of it, I don't blame them, you know, for opposing it or not supporting it. I'm not saying the opposition came from everyone, you know, but you know, the majority. There were a few interesting people that were like, you know, that's what you want to do, pursue that, you know, within a realistic thing, you know, if you feel you have a moderate talent, you know, go for it. And I remember those comments, and at least I remember the people that were encouraging during those years.
So you had both sides. You had some support, and then you had people that were like, why aren't you a millionaire yet? What's wrong with you?
there's a bit of both, you know, a bit of both. And people do feel, you know, people do feel they feel they can ask you all these things, like how much you make, you know, how do you make your money? You know, they're really puzzled by the whole thing.
Well, can you talk a little bit about, you know, just for our audience then, because I think, you know, your career trajectory is really interesting. So can you just talk a little bit about that? So, you know, in your 20s, like what sort of path did you start working towards?
What came after just getting into music pretty much?
Yeah, doing the bands.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I played in many bands throughout the years. In 1986, I moved to Los Angeles. And again, it wasn't really to pursue music for a living. I came through an invitation, and I ended up here in L.A., and I liked it. And it's a city that received me so well. And I came with some demos and recorders, started passing them around. I became friends with other musicians. I continue playing live in different projects, you know, particularly in one band that I had at the time called Languis, L-A-N-G-U-I-S. And it was me and another person, and then it became a four-piece. And with that, during those years were the years of, in a way, kind of like, quote-unquote, trying to make it, you know, where you're pursuing this idea of, like, oh, the band will, you know, hopefully the band will do well and start making money. And looking back, you know, you kind of realize kind of the absurdity behind it, you know, like, especially for the type of music we were making. There was no clear path on what was the plan, but it was this hopeful thing that somehow money will kick in, you know, like crazy. And
was it like you were looking for a record label deal or?
Yeah, no, well, it wasn't a record. I mean, we put out records, and the band did fairly well, and we tour, and we got airplay on Case. You know, we got played on KCRW. We got played on different stations. We actually did fairly well on KXLU. I remember being number 3 or number 1 on their charts.
Nice,
but it never really translates into something that you can quit your job. You know, one important development. In 1999 was that Dublab started, the radio station. And through Dublab, really, I knew friends that were on DJs, and I got involved with the station within a couple of months of the station opening. And that really kind of started, it was a seed that all of us planted that started giving its fruits, you know, its rewards over the years, very slowly, and the key to that was that, you know, was finding a community of people, and that's really the key to start kind of building something realistic out of anything you want to make, you know, any career. I think you need to find your tribe, you know, you have to find your group of people, your community, where you collaborate, where you don't just take, but you also offer opportunities to others. And that really came together with Dublab, and then When the band broke up in 2004, 2005, it was and that was the first time that the band, you know, like literally kind of broke up, kind of like, you know, like everyone walks away in, yeah, you know, in not very good terms, kind of thing. And mm-hmm. and that gave me an understanding little by little of really how you do it. And I think the key is to take everything you do as projects. You don't put everything into one band and hope, you know. And then you see it in so many artists. You look at someone like, I don't know, you look at someone like Jimmy Page, you know, from Led Zeppelin. He was playing in singles, in bands, in so many projects. And Led Zeppelin, you know, is a project that took off. But he was, you know, in so many bands before. And then you see that with so many artists like him. They were doing some writing for this, they were doing some producing, they were doing this, they were doing that, and so instead of, like, you know, this idea of a band that is this family and we all rise or go down together, really, right. I started to understand, oh no, you need to have many projects, you know, and you do a bit of this, and then, you know, on Tuesdays you do this other project, and then you learn how to mix. Those things start paying your bills, and soon enough you find yourself in a position that that, you know, you can make a living, you know. And what tends to happen is whatever you're doing that's succeeding, they keep calling you, and you start doing more of that. And then you find yourself many times doing things that you didn't think you were going to do. I do some work for TV, for like PBS documentaries and stuff like that. And that came as an accident. That came through a friend of mine that was working for a toy company, and they needed some music for toys. You know, the other people heard it, said, oh, you know what, I have this thing for TV, maybe you can compose. And things started doing, you know, well on that end, you know. And then if it's something that you moderately enjoy it, or you feel you can do it and you like it, then you pursue those things, and you let the demand of that type of work will determine really what paths you follow. Because you're going to always be chasing, you know, what works, but it's a combination. You're going to chase the things that pay your bills, that you enjoy, and you feel that you can do, you know, fairly well. Mm-hmm. And that really defined my path in what I do with music. And the same with Dubla, the radio station. I'm currently the director of the station. But I joined as one of the artists around. I started then DJing at the station. Then I became the general manager, and then I became director about two and a half years ago. And with the station was the same. It's something that I like doing paperwork. I like the organizational side of things. And to apply, you know, that kind of office work, or that kind of, like, you know, routine kind of mentality of, like, oh, I can do this office work, to something that I actually found myself enjoying in quite a bit. And that was very beneficial for the station, and therefore beneficial for me, you know.
Can you tell our audience about Dub Labs, like what it's all about? Because I don't think enough people know about it.
No, yeah, of course. Dub Lab is a radio station that started in 1999. We're based here in Los Angeles. It's a nonprofit radio station that functions similar to what public radio, how public radio functions. We do fundraisers. We get funding from different organizations, sponsors, listeners. And since the beginning, always we've been very adventurous with the music we present. It has been the home of many artists that went on to do great things out there in the world. People such as Flying Lotus, people like Daedalus, Dentelle, so many others. And through that, we also do a number of other projects, such as events, art projects, just weird stuff out there related to film, and, you know, just lots of things. And it's good. Over the years, the station has been growing, now with affiliate stations in Barcelona, Cologne, Germany, and Tokyo. And we're one of the first online stations, really, ever. We started in 1999. And about a year or so, a couple of years ago, we got a license to go on FM. So we're now a terrestrial radio station.
That's so cool. What's the numbers?
With limited, very, very limited coverage, you know, it's a small license. It's not a huge coverage, but nevertheless, we you know, it's terrestrial. It's 99.1 FM.
Okay,
and we're still in the we're still in the process. It's a long process. So.
Yeah, but if you're nearby,
Exactly. Stand by. You'll be able to hear it, you know, in more places in the city soon. It's just it's going to take a minute.
Yeah, that's great, though. That's really exciting. So maybe talk a little bit about how DubLab, you know, because you guys are definitely outside of the mainstream. And I think that that's a really good thing because you can now support and participate in a lot more sort of creative endeavors and art projects. And maybe talk a little bit more about, you know, so you were saying you did some composing for PBS. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Well, those are two separate things.
So you did that on my own.
Yes, that's on my own. That's something I do as a musician, composer. You know, I have a small kind of like home studio, and I do that on the side. And those are
yourself?
Fun projects. There's one.
Did you teach yourself?
Yes, I taught myself. Really many times when you put yourself in a situation that you take a job without fully knowing if you can do it, you learn real fast. I'll tell you. You're like, probably you know too. You know, you're like, can you do this? I think I can do it. And they're like, oh my god, what am I gonna do? You know, and then you give it a shot and you try. You know, and you know. In other professions, of course, I can't, you know, but with music overall, I can figure it out. It's been great. Yeah, actually, there's a film that is premiering soon. It's playing on PBS, I think, in March, called The Story of Oscar Acosta, which was the real-life Dr. Gonzo from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's really interesting about his life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I made the music for that with my friend Aaron Drake, and it's a film by Philip Rodriguez. So that's my you know, pitch in there, like off the shelf. But it's really good.
Nice.
It came out really good, the documentary. And then with DubLab, yeah, we do a lot of projects. You know, we do a ton of things. And like you said, you know, we are outside the mainstream as an organization. But also the understanding of what mainstream and it's not is not quite defined, you know, the way it used to nowadays. Everything is more blended. So we do have a foot in some parts of the mainstream as well, just like everything. We're not, you know, we don't have this kind of self-righteous thing of like nothing from a major label or, you know,
right.
we do always keep an open mind, you know. Good music, interesting things come from all corners of the spectrum. And we with that in mind, we always stay open.
Mm-hmm. What would you say DubLab's mission is in terms of, you know, serving the community?
Well, for us, there's many. I mean, there's a proper mission statement, but really, there's a number of ways. There's a number of sides to our mission. The most obvious one is to broadcast quality programming related to arts, music, and culture. And that is in the form of radio programs, some podcasts we create, events we make, and really project our vision to the world through that. And we believe that through our programming, the community we're in, we enrich the community with the programming we do. And the other side of it is really providing a platform for artists that are that don't have a platform, you know, a voice, to provide a voice to those artists. And we do it daily here at the station.
And this is also true for the Barcelona station.
It's the same, yes. The same. Both Barcelona, the Spain, Germany, and Japan stations are all under the same kind of ethos and you know, vision.
If you can just talk to me a little bit about, you know, how, you know, young artists or young DJs, like, is there kind of a mentorship that happens, or how is that, like, how do people sort of get opportunities at DubLab that they normally wouldn't be able to find at other stations?
Well, we do get requests all the time to come and volunteer and help. And really, people just reach out from all over. We get dozens of requests. I say we get an average of one or two requests a day. And we can't obviously accommodate everyone, but, you know, we try to get a feel with people that we feel connect with the station, that understand who we are, and are not just people that are trying to, quote unquote, kind of make it, you know. I think we try to dig deeper into the mission of the artists that are involved, or we try to get artists involved that are past that idea, you know, and they're actually doing interesting work, things that I think have, I don't know, they're interesting, there's cool stuff, you know. And then we always keep an open mind here, and we really make it a point, we really try to purposely look beyond if someone does well, if they have good social media numbers or whatever that is. I don't even pay attention to that, actually. So yeah, so that's pretty much we tell people to come and get involved, and do, you know, come and create and you know, explore, and many people here meet, and it happens very organically. People that started volunteering here, then they start DJing sometimes, sometimes they move on to other things, sometimes they meet other people and they get jobs. People have built entire careers out of starting here at Dubla. They meet someone else, and from that it goes to this, from that it goes to that. From there, you know, you see them as working artists.
Yeah. And that's, I like what you were saying before. It's like about, you know, like Flying Lotus, and, you know, that it must be just really fascinating to kind of watch the trajectory of, like, you know, played at Dub Lab and then suddenly it's picked up by KCRW, or, you know, and then you kind of watch it keep going and going and going, you know, picked up by, you know, European radio, then it's picked up, you know, and it just keeps sort of building up.
It's great.
It must be really kind of exciting, you know what I mean? Because it's like, you're basically the starting point for many.
Exactly. And then it's very rewarding because we always think, like, their success is our success. You know, the fact that we see people that come here at such an early stage in their careers and go on to do great things, I am happy to see them succeed, because it also means that we had somewhat of a role in there, I want to believe. And I'm not saying without us they would have made it, of course. You know, they would have probably do just as well, but I'm happy to see that you know, generation after generation, because we've been broadcasting for almost 19 years. You see new wave of people coming over, getting involved, and from there doing great things, and that reflects, ultimately reflects well on us, because it shows that, you know, we have a vision as an organization, you know, and we were able to connect and identify things that we feel are worth sharing.
You talked a little bit, like, you have this, you know, you're doing film composing, and you have this film coming out in March. Are you still able to do your own music? Do you perform anywhere?
Yes, I play in a band called Pharaohs. And we still put out records. We put out a record last year through this label called International Feel, and which is run by this musician called Mark Barrett. And his stuff is great, and the label is great, and we're very proud to be part of that, you know, the catalog now of the label. And we do play live, and, you know, we're pretty active as well with that. And I always feel like that's an important thing to continue. No matter what you do during the day, always keep that corner of the stuff that is yours, you know? And always put yourself, but to me, it's important to put yourself in positions where it forces you to having to create. It's so easy to, at the end of the day, kind of, you know, just go home, you know, wanting to watch a movie, not do anything. But, you know, if you schedule practice or recording with your bandmates, you know, every Monday, I don't know, then at least every Monday you'll meet and get some work done, maybe slowly, but then you'll look back a year later and like, oh, we have these ideas going, you know. So it's important to put yourself in a position to create. It's almost like going to the gym, you know.
Working that muscle.
You know, exactly. You have to find a routine. You have to find a way to do it that that forces you to get out there and do it.
It's very easy.
It's very easy to ignore. It's very easy to because you don't have to, you know. And like you said, it's like a muscle. You know, creativity is a muscle, and you gotta exercise it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is what does 2018 hold for you personally and for DubLab?
Well, the station continues growing. We're doing, this year we're taking this ambient night we do every once a year called Tonalism. It's an all-night ambient music event. We're taking it to Bonnaroo Festival in Tennessee.
Nice.
So that's
going to
be really exciting. Besides that, we're improving the way we offer our programming through improving our app for mobile devices, improving our website. We're actually getting a new website done at the moment, adding more shows. We have a few events coming up, fundraising. So just improving on what we've built. And then outside that, I have a few kind of jobs here and there on the side as a musician, and with Pharos we're recording again and developing, working towards new record, new release. We're still early, so we don't know what it's going to be, but we have a few ideas going on. We have a few remixes we're working on, so always keeping active.
So are you going to tour? Like, how do you find time to do everything?
Well, the touring is not as necessary these days, and I personally not crazy about touring. It's not something that I really enjoy. So I don't, it's just, it's relative, you know, how touring, it's a lifestyle. I don't know how to put it, you know, and it's not really my thing. So we try not to tour too much. We will do stints and we'll go to New York and do be there for 3 or 4 days and we play in a few cities around that, or the same with we go up to San Francisco. But I've done the getting in a van and hit the road for 2 months, and I do not like it.
You're not alone.
It's a hard life.
You're not alone in that. Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. It's a young person's kind of game, and even then I wasn't thrilled about it.
Right. Well, and nowadays too, people are saying, the artists that I've interviewed, it's online. You can build a fan base without ever leaving your house. You know,
exactly. Well, you still have to put yourself out there. I do believe that you have to do. There's three things that you need to do, and this is not my words. I heard someone else say this at a conference. You know, they were saying this, and there's three things you have to do. You have to be nice. You have to be relatively good at what you do, and you have to get out there. And you do have to get out there. You do have to get out in the streets. You do have to, roll up your sleeves and carry equipment. You do have to be out there shaking hands and meeting people. And you got to be out there. You can't just do it all from the comfort of your computer. That's not going to take you far.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have to be in a major city, live in a major city to do that? Like LA?
It does provide more opportunities. Yes. It does. Yeah. That's undeniable. Yes. Proximity to where the industries are. Yes, if you want to be in the car business, most likely Detroit is the place you want to be.
Right.
You know, I'd say. Right. I don't know. I'm not an expert, but you know what I mean.
You need to have exposure.
The proximity, yes.
Yeah.
It does help. I'm not saying it's a must. I am not saying it's a must, but it does increases your chances of succeeding. You know, there's just more opportunities. That's all.
Yeah. So are there any more films that you're going to be working on this year? Or?
Not that I know of at the time. I'm just doing some editing for this live performance that was filmed, but that's not composing, for this artist called Susan Sultan. She's a great artist, and I worked with her many times. I love Susan. She's the best. And
that's cool.
I'm doing some sound editing for that. That should be done. And then
you taught yourself that, right? You taught yourself sound editing.
Yeah, and you learn from some people. I didn't go to school. I didn't go to school.
I think that's what's so great.
It wasn't as common.
Just DIY. You just taught yourself. I love that.
Yeah. Well, it also comes from a time where it wasn't as common to go to school for things like this,
So there wasn't as many resources, right?
Yeah, I just come from I'm older, so I come from a pre-internet kind of you know, stuff, you know. But these days you can teach yourself on, there's incredible tutorials on YouTube. I mean, you can learn anything these days, you know. But you kind of figure it out yourself, you know, and you learn tricks and people teach you and you exchange. And that's part of like finding your community. Everyone helps each other. Oh, this is how you mix these things. Oh, this is how to, and then also developing a year. This is the key, you know, that is the most, the most important instrument you could have, your ears. The other equipment comes and goes, you know. People that get stuck in these things, oh, if I had this thing, if I had this instrument, if I had this drum machine, if I had this sampler, if I had this thing, it's like you're on the wrong path. Let me tell you that, you know. It's not about the gear. It's about the feel, you know. Mm-hmm. It's about having a good ear, feeling it. There's some basics in equipment that you need to have, of course, but you don't need a lot, you know. There's a lot more you can do with good style, with good ear, with good taste, a lot more, you know.
Yep. Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, I know you're a busy guy with so much going on, so I'm going to let you go. But thank you so much, Ali. I really appreciate it. It was just such a great chat.
Thank you.
And you gave some really good advice and insight, so really appreciate it.
Oh, of course, of course. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Really, really good stuff. So grateful to Ali for being on the show and sharing really cool stories about DubLab and his own personal music journey and all the DIY stuff. So again, DubLab is DubLab.com, and they're on all the streaming platforms. And you can also, if you are in the area in close proximity, you can check them out on the FM dial at 99.1. Ali's music again is going to be featured on that upcoming film, The Rise and Fall of the Brown Buffalo, on PBS next month. Be sure to check that out. Also, Pharaohs and their new album is on International Feel, which you can find on SoundCloud and Facebook. So be sure to check that out. I am your host, L. Ariel. Again, we're at musicjobspodcast.com. We also are on all the streaming platforms. And you can find my music and all my stuff at LARIELmusic.com. That's LARIELmusic.com. I hope everyone has a wonderful week and you continue to grow and thrive. And here we go, babies. So let's keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't give up.